She inspires, educates, and informs. She talks the talk and walks the walk. She doesn't tell you what to think. She just wants you to. She's Mrs. Green. And this is Mrs. Green's World on the Mrs. Green's World Network. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everybody. I'm Gina Murphy-Darling, and you are listening to Mrs. Green's World, an inspirational and informative place where we don't tell you what to think, we just want you to. Thanks so much for joining us. And thanks to our sponsor of this show and a great partner of Mrs. Green's World, the Chapman Automotive Group. They are committed to doing their share and showing they care about their community and the planet. For more information, please visit them at chapmantucson.com, and I think you will be glad you did, no matter where you are in the country. So let's talk about the very exciting, very important show with a very important guest who has a powerful message that we are going to be spending time with this next hour. It's all about joining the fight for our planet, the fight for our health, and I mean fighting like our lives depend on it, which it does. Our lives do, they do. We're going to be talking about the ravages of climate change and, more importantly, what one impressive organization is doing to lead the charge. Please join me in welcoming Olena Alec. She is the Director for Climate Reality Leader Engagement for the Climate Reality Project. Their mission is to catalyze a global solution to the climate crisis by making urgent action a necessity across every level of society. Founded in 2006 by Nobel laureate and former U.S. Vice President Al Gore, who got the world talking about climate change with the Academy Award-winning film An Inconvenient Truth, the Climate Reality Project continues to move the conversation forward and turn awareness into action. Olena, you know how thrilled I am to have you and so appreciative, given everything on your plate, that you're taking an hour to be with us. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much, Dina. I'm thrilled to be chatting with you here today.
And I'll be talking more about this throughout the show, but I am a proud recent graduate, and that will mean something as the show goes on. So, two-part question right out of the chute. What is the Climate Reality Project, and why is the work you're doing more important now than perhaps maybe since the founding of the organization in 2006, or is it?
Great. Yes, great question. So the Climate Reality Project, as you pointed out, founded in 2006 by our chairman and founder, Al Gore, you know, we are working globally in 136 countries to try to move forward the shift in from dirty fossil fuels to renewables. And we're doing this across all levels of society in a variety of ways. And so we're a small but we like to think mighty nonprofit based here in D.C. with offices around the world, working with our large base of climate reality leaders, of which you are one, as well as just trying to get our message out through a variety of channels.
And it's big. I mean, it is really big. I liken it to an army, even though I'm not necessarily sure I like that word, but the army for good and everything, including, you know, combating climate change and, of course, inherent in that are social justice issues and on and on and on. So even though I would like to spend the majority of our time together talking about the Climate Reality Leadership Corps, there are three other initiatives that I think are really important that we briefly touch on that are under the purview of the Climate Reality before we delve into the details of the Leadership Corps. So tell us about the Climate Speakers Network. That's one I found that I thought was amazing.
Yeah, certainly. So our Climate Speakers Network is a small and dedicated team here that is working in really increasing kind of the peer-to-peer communications and very targeted audiences. So they're working with the Latino community, they're working with the health community, they're working with the business community. And basically, instead of a leadership core model, which is a much larger training, and we can only host them 3 to 4 times a year around the world, our Climate Speakers Network is very nimble. So they're running trainings almost once a week in much smaller settings in order to get to the local communities and building up those partnerships at a local level. So right now they've goodness, they've run hundreds of trainings since they started in 2015. I couldn't tell you everywhere exactly, but mostly it's been focused here in the U.S. But I do know that later this year they are going to start expanding globally, which is really exciting. It's those peer-to-peer communications, that values-based messaging, can really get climate education and that climate conversation into areas that we previously just simply haven't been before. So they're doing that in so many different communities, which is really exciting to see.
And so inherent in that is the cultural awareness. And when you talk about the Latino community, how do you craft the message so that it is receptive and appropriate? I mean, everybody does not think alike, and we all have different ways of hearing the same thing. So that's another plus. When I read about that, I'm like, I didn't even know that until I started doing my research. So kudos again. And then you have got to tell us in detail. I mean, I went down the rabbit hole, 24 hours of reality. I could hardly get my head around what was accomplished in 2016, and I think it's a story worth telling during this hour.
Yes. So 24 Hours of Reality is one of our flagship programs. It is really exciting. It is quite literally a 24-hour live broadcast that we put on once a year in December, so you can look forward to it coming back in December. And I believe this will be our sixth or seventh. I'll have to double check that. And so each year for 24 live hours, Mr. Gore and experts and storytellers and guests are telling the story of climate change, and we're traversing the world to highlight regions and countries. And each year has a different theme. So whether we're talking about dirty weather, whether we're talking about renewable energy solutions, whether we're talking about telling a personal climate story, it's an incredible opportunity for really anyone to tune in, because of course the time will work out for you at some point around the world, and we're really honestly getting started right now in crafting out this year's message, simply because it really does take us 6 or so months to put on to gather all the material for 24 live hours.
I know what it takes to put on a 1 hour podcast. So when I was looking at that and looking at some of the people who spoke and the coordination of that effort, it's monumental. I mean, it's really, really, really big.
It certainly is, and it takes every team here contributes, and we have a fantastic special projects team that takes the lead on it. So all of us are plugging in our variety of pieces, and so myself and my team, we're really focused on getting climate reality leaders spotlighted each hour, ensuring that their stories are being told, and that we're able to also loop in our branch managers. We have a great international team that is working directly with our 10 branches around the world to ensure that we're not trying to dictate anything here from the U.S., but really relying on our local experts to help tell these stories.
And the joy of attending a leadership training is to hear some of the stories of the transformation that occurred in human beings by a 3-day experience. I mean, it's pretty impressive. So I'm glad that you're going to be picking from climate reality trainees, the graduates that have hopefully been carrying on the message. And then there's another component that, and I did want to ask you, so there's the 24 hours, and in that, are there calls to action, and is there a social media, blanketed campaign that's global? What kind of some of the other ingredients are in the 24 hours of reality? And then is it all recorded?
That is a great question. So it's actually a mix of, there are some pre-recorded videos, things like regional videos that we actually send film crews around the world to capture those stories.
Right.
But actually, the majority of it is live.
Unbelievable.
So I know. In past years, we've had studios in New York, or we've had regional hub studios where Mr. Gore and our team are there, staying up all night to ensure that we're telling the story from a variety of perspectives, even if we are only in one location at that exact time. So it's a long few days to get the production out, but it's really incredible. It's really inspiring to be there, and you'd be surprised how much energy everyone has at 4 a.m.
I probably wouldn't, knowing what happened when I was in Denver. There's something about supercharging the atmosphere when you're around people that care deeply about our planet and want to make a difference so passionately. It's pretty inspirational, and it stays with you. So a perfect segue to that is the Climate Reality Project Campus Core, you know, our future, our young minds that are coming up to take leadership positions more quickly than some of us can even handle. So tell us about that project and why it's so important as well.
Yes, absolutely. So our campaigns team has done a great job in building out local chapters here in the U.S. of youth on campuses who want to ensure that their campus, that their college and university is driving in the right direction and that they're moving towards renewable energy. And so our teams here provide the opportunities and toolkits and resources to ensure that they're able to pressure their officials at their schools to go 100% committed. And so 100% committed is the campaign name we have that both Campus Core and our I Am Pro Snow groups use, because we want people to commit to 100% renewable electricity. And you know, young people are they're so motivated. They're ready to play a key role in this movement. And it's honestly really exciting to see how quickly some of the Campus Core groups have grown and are expanding. So we also try to get many of them to attend our leadership core trainings. You know, they're already leaders in their own right. They're already leaders there on their campus. We want to ensure that they're well tied into the global leadership core movement as they grow and expand, and of course as they leave their college campuses and on to even greater things.
Well, what I think is pretty amazing is that you're actually planting seeds for those kinds of things by the people that you include in the Climate Reality Leadership Training. Because I spoke to high schoolers, I did a video with two kids from Vermont that I'm going to have on the show, and their knowledge, their presence, their finesse, I mean, I can't even articulate it adequately. They're high schoolers, and how they are able to just have a presence that is so strong and so clear. So they will probably go on to start campus locations wherever they go to college. I mean, those seeds are planted early in their teens.
Absolutely. And you know, we've had climate reality leaders as young as 9 who, you know, at first you wonder, can they take all of this doom and gloom, or are they able to, you know, to process all of this information? I mean, climate science can be dense. While it doesn't have to be, you know, when you get into the nitty-gritty, it can be a lot of information to process. And yet these 9-year-olds are out explaining climate science in you know, the simplest of terms to their classmates, to their principals, to even their congressmen in some respects, and they're making a huge difference. Having that voice is just so incredibly important. And honestly, every one of our climate leaders is able to kind of leverage their voice and leverage their, you know, values and messaging to reach out to audiences that are not within our green choir.
And there was something that happened even with my group. From my group leader, she brought her son, Maria Rotunda, and she had her son. And, you know, I was staring at him. I think he was 11, maybe 12. Maybe he was really old, like 12, not 9. And his grasp of complex concepts and his input to the group, you know, it's like I had to do an adjustment thinking he's how old? And then starting to listen to what incredible wisdom was coming out of his mouth. So it's like we need them, and we also know that we're doing this work to mitigate climate change for us right now, because climate change is happening now. I used to say I'm doing it for my grandchildren, and now I'm saying it, I'm doing it for me and my children and my grandchildren, because it's accelerating so much. Okay, here's a fun one that did have quite an impressive presence at the Denver training. I Am Pro Snow. And I love the headline on the page on your website that reads, "We need snow, but right now snow needs us." So talk about that initiative a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. So again, this I Am Pro Snow group, Zyme Pro Snow Movement, is really dedicated within our 100% committed campaign. And so we have winter sports athletes, businesses, resorts, and mountain communities around the world joining up to help stop climate change and to commit their towns, their businesses and communities to go 100%. And the team has done an incredible job and are still hard at work and have gotten cities like Boulder and Salt Lake City and Park City to sign on and to commit to going 100%. And it's just so, it's so great to see this community that is so dedicated to their livelihood is so tied to, you know, to winter, to having snowpack, to having this opportunity that is obviously so tied to the climate crisis. And so we've just seen such dedication and such motivation in these communities, and it's really helped to spark a conversation and a movement in a place where you might not immediately jump to when thinking about the climate crisis.
It's such a good point, because I think with climate change, one of the things we've talked a lot about on the Mrs. Green's World team is climate change. You know, you can sweep your hand and say it's happening out there. And once it hits your neighborhood or your family or a loved one or a village or a town or a city, it starts to becoming up close and personal. And listening to the people that do, they are on the mountain. They make their livelihood, they feed their families, they do really amazing things in the outdoors, and they're really worried. And you got to feel that and see that and get a sense for what that means, which is a stretch if you're living in some place that it's going to be 114 next Tuesday. You know, I mean, it's like, oh yeah, pro snow. I remember snow. But I mean, it brought it right down and focused the lens on what that means to our planet and to livelihoods and to people that not just love it, but it's another indicator of what the chances are and what we could lose without paying attention to that piece. So what a passionate, engaging group of people there. So the next segment I want to talk about, get into what I used to say the meat and potatoes of this, but you can't say that anymore. I have to say like the tofu and the spinach salad of this, because one of the things for this attendee, it's, you know, it's been a big change for me. I grew up eating meat and potatoes, and that's not what I want to continue to do. So it was very interesting for all of these conferences to see how conscious everyone is about the food we're consuming and having it be, you know, systemic and walking the mm-hmm. walk. So let's consider the heart and soul of the Climate Reality Project. I might be a little bit biased. Maybe you are too.
Me too.
You know, so it's okay. We'll be biased. It's our hour. The Climate Reality Leadership Core, of which you are the director of Climate Reality Leader Engagement. It's a big job. And I said that to you in person. And I watch the details. I watch the logistics, watching how you make it all work and your team. I know that you're very clear about you have a team. And, you know, let the record show that I am a proud graduate of the Leadership Training Corps, having attended the most recent one in Denver. And it really has been transformative for me and for the others I'm keeping in contact with. So we have 2 minutes before the break, so maybe you can get started and we'll come back with, it's a very short break, about just tell us, what's the training itself? Intensive, hands-on, sit down and pay attention training.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, thank you so much. My job is honestly exciting and interesting every single day, because I do, my job is to support and amplify the message and work that climate reality leaders like yourself are doing all around the world. So honestly, it makes my job quite easy and motivating every day. So a leadership core training, in short, are three very intensive but very motivating days surrounded with hundreds of smart, like-minded community leaders and grasstops leaders and people who just want to learn about the climate crisis. And in the course of those 3 days, we obviously talk a lot about the science of climate change. We'll talk about the impacts, and we'll really talk a lot about the solutions. We'll talk about how to talk about climate change, how to tell your climate story, best practices around public speaking and social media and grassroots organizing. And hopefully we leave all of our attendees with the momentum to bring solutions back into their communities, back into their world, and to ensure that they're staying connected to this global network of almost 12,000 climate reality leaders around the world.
Okay, let's hold it on that note. We'll be back in a minute. So much more about the Climate Reality Project and the Climate Reality Leadership Corps with Olena Alec. We'll be right back.
Join us for a new on-demand podcast every week at MrsGreensWorld.com. Listen on your computer or mobile device using the iHeartRadio or SoundCloud mobile apps. We are a proud member of the iHeartRadio, Glimmerglass, and Speak Up networks. Connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram. Stay in touch with information about healthy living, sustainability, contests, and events by signing up for our e-newsletter on our website. If you have questions or comments about the show, write to us at info@MrsGreensWorld.com. We'd love to hear from you. But right now, back to Mrs. Green.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Gina Murphy-Darling, and you are listening to Mrs. Green's World, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. Thanks for listening. Joining me for this hour is Olena Alec. She is the director for the Climate Reality Leader Engagement for the Climate Reality Project. And I just would like to talk a little bit more about her. She is originally from Maui, and one might ask, why would you leave Maui to go to Washington, D.C.? Mm-hmm. But that's another show. She has a bachelor's degree in environmental studies from the University of Southern California, aka USC, and a master's degree in environmental science and policy from Columbia University. Olena also served in the Peace Corps in Nicaragua, working with her community on issues of environmental protection and teaching sustainability. So she was what I would call boots on the ground and got to see a lot of what she is now training climate leaders to be aware of. So Olena, again, thanks for being here. And just a little bit about I want to really get in here about one of the big surprises to me about the training. And that was the totally hands-on approach of Vice President Al Gore. And I don't know what I expected. I expected he's a busy man and he has lots of other engagements and he gets to speak all over the world. But his passion was beyond impressive. His vast knowledge of so many different topics. I mean, he threw out researchers' names and, you know, back in 72 and back in, you know, here, and I worked with so-and-so and knew the names, knew their research, so many pieces of research. So I just thought I have to give high praise to him. I'm still manic depressive that I didn't get a selfie with him, but I also might add that he is swarmed. I mean, he is swarmed at this, and I was not pushy enough. So there's going to be another day. And I'm saying that on air, President Al Gore. I'm looking forward to my selfie. So
yeah, absolutely. We hear this so often that people are so surprised at his hands-on approach, but honestly, he's in it right from the beginning. He is helping to choose the locations from where we go. He is reviewing every agenda version, every speaker recommendation for every session. He is very much in our process, and because this is his program, he built this program back in 2006, coming out of An Inconvenient Truth. And when people asked what he wanted to do, what was the next step, he said he wanted to train people. He wanted to train people on how to give his presentation, how to talk about climate science impacts and solutions to their communities and their networks. And so this is has been his program from the very beginning. So he opens and closes the program. He obviously gives his presentation. He'll do Q&A sessions with the audience. He is moderating and leading panels. He is giving an abbreviated version of the presentation. He is very much all in and wants this program and these climate reality leaders to be trained successfully so that they feel motivated and empowered to go back into their communities and take climate action.
I mean, hands-on. You can tell it is his heart. It comes from his heart and his brain and it is his life's work. And like you said, he sat there moderating panels, and he knew who those people were. I mean, you could tell by some of the questions that weren't on the list and how he would lead the discussion. I was incredibly impressed. So that's, I think that's really noteworthy, and how much he knew, and his slides, like my kingdom for his slide collection. He's got probably the best in the world, and we'll talk a little about that when we come to Reality Hub. So let's talk about attendees. You have attendees from all over the world, and I was curious about, does the location of the training influence some of what might be covered in one training versus another? For example, there's mega fires all in the Southwest, and there's coastal flooding in other areas. So what are some of the influencers in terms of content? How do you decide what makes the agenda?
Absolutely. It's a great question. And really, we do try to focus regionally. So for instance, by the time this podcast is released, we'll have just wrapped up a training in the Pacific Northwest. We'll be in Bellevue, right outside of Seattle, Washington. So we're focusing a lot on Pacific Northwest impacts as well as Pacific Northwest solutions. At the training you attended in Denver, we were focusing a lot on Colorado issues of water and energy and that nexus, as well as issues that are impacting the West. When we go abroad, we're obviously trying to tailor a lot of the region-specific sessions on those issues that are taking place. And Mr. Gore does the same with his slideshow. So each of them are very much tailored to the region and country that we're in for many reasons. One, because we naturally expect most of our audience, most of our attendees to be from the country in which we're presenting, simply for logistical reasons. And so while we do have a global audience, and we do always have to keep that in mind when drafting these agendas and ensuring that it is globally relevant, we do want to ensure that we're providing a lot of regionally specific information and news and resources. Now, if you were to attend a training somewhere else, say in India, you can always access all of our, you know, all of our past resources, all of Mr. Gore's presentation decks that he's given at other trainings, so that you can find the regionally specific information you need to feel ready to give the presentation or complete an action within your community.
Right. And then in terms of, I mean, when I was doing this, I kept thinking of the big job and the relevance of it to our listeners, because I'm hopeful that people will listen and be inspired to try to attend one, because to me the magic was it's free to attend and you are responsible for your transportation and lodging, which is to me so generous. When you think about what training cost for 3 days of that training, it would be cost prohibitive for most people, which is what I appreciated so much about it. It allows access regardless of your financial or socioeconomic status. That is, as a social activist, that was very impressive to me. So how does, like, I would not want this job. How do you really help decide who's there and what kinds of things are you looking at to make sure that segments are represented, that cultures are represented, that, you know, sexes, male and female, and ages? Who sits on that panel? Because I'm sure that you have. What do you try to? Is there something you try to follow in terms of how you do it?
Yeah, that's a really good question, and honestly, it all boils down to one simple point: Are you ready to take climate action? That's what we're looking for. That's why we do have an application process. We're really not trying to be exclusive at all, which is why we accept people on a rolling basis, and we generally always fill up before our deadline, simply because there are so many people out there who are excited to take climate action, who are ready, who are looking for, you know, potentially more information, more of the science, more tools to be at hand. But as long as you're committed and ready to take action, then we want you in that room. And there really is no kind of perfect application. There is no perfect mix. We simply expect the people in that room to have committed.
And that is, you know, the process. I mean, my whole team was waiting to see if I heard, did I get accepted? Because it is a great application process. And I think part of the vetting of that is, are the people like me committed to after the training? That's the most important thing. It's not a feel good, you know, build your climate knowledge up. It's about, once you do that, what is the call to action and how are you going to take climate action out there to the masses? So a lot of kudos for that. And, you know, I just want to mention, it might not seem as relevant, but I think it matters. I even loved, and I shared this with a lot of people, how we were assigned groups by our region. So I sat with people from Arizona, which makes a lot of sense. I later found out there were more people from Arizona there that I didn't connect with, but there's a great story there too. And I know this sounds weird, but I loved that you changed the location of our tables. Mm-hmm. And that, I mean, I hope you get feedback about that, because why does that matter? Well, it matters because you're sitting around different people and you're connecting with the table next to you and you get different views. You're closer to the, you know, the panelists at some points. And it just seemed to me something very different, and I was really appreciative of that. So I wanted to pass that feedback on. It's like, it seemed, well, it was so thoughtful is what I thought. It just, you know, it seems to matter.
Yeah, we completely agree. And Denver was our 34th training. And you know, we are consistently iterating. And the simple things like that, like switching around tables, or grouping people by region, or providing networking lunches and various opportunities. You know, we're learning as we go as well. So it's always nice to hear some great feedback, and always happy to, you know, try out new things as well. There are always so many great, interesting testing opportunities for us to see how we can just make this better and better. And we listen very seriously to feedback, to the participant surveys. So a lot of the ideas came right from your fellow climate reality leaders at a previous training.
And it was listened to. I mean, to me, that's one of the most significant pieces. You listened, and it wasn't your first rodeo, but you were willing to change things up. Let's talk about the role of mentors. I was really impressed by the role of mentors, because that's another responsibility. And they are, I believe, you know, previous attendees, they have done the work. I am a mentor wannabe, trust me. And how does the mentor work, and how are they selected?
Yeah, great question. So mentors are, as you stated, previously trained climate reality leaders, and they are people who have walked the walk, who have stayed engaged, who are taking climate action, and who are reporting back to us, who are letting us know what they're up to. The mentor application is another application that is open to any climate reality leader for any training. And so we do get hundreds of those for every training. And so sorting through those, if you can believe it, is even more difficult.
I do believe that. I mean, it's a smaller pool. You don't have as many to pick from.
Yeah, it's a smaller pool. And you know, we, in an ideal scenario, in an ideal circumstance, we would be bringing mentors that perfectly mapped to our attendees, so that our attendees would have, as you said, you know, being in Arizona, that in an ideal world, we would have a mentor from Arizona to represent 19 mentees. Now, of course, that math does not always work out. So we try to get it by region or by country. But it's absolutely, I mean, that pool for mentors is so incredibly high. And we have such just amazing climate leaders from around the world who are applying. So we need to keep a lot of things in mind. First off, we're always looking for what they've reported back. What are they up to in terms of taking climate action? But we're also looking for regional relevance. Obviously, a training in the U.S., we're going to have all or almost all U.S. mentors for carbon footprint reasons, for budget reasons. We have to keep a lot in mind in terms of balancing it. But it's really fun, and it's so exciting to have our mentors at the trainings. And they're honestly, I mean, they are themselves just volunteers who have quite literally volunteered for even more work and to mentee a group of individuals that they've never met before and to really help us facilitate some of the sessions. So I tell mentors this before every training. We could not have a training without them. It makes it such a different experience than a lot of the other trainings or conferences you attend to have someone there with you at your table, helping to facilitate, working the issues through, gathering questions and feedback. They make that connection on a more scalable ratio than we could ever hope to.
And I agree with you. I don't see how you could do it without them, because it is that lasting impact. That's a core of volunteers. And kudos to Maria, because we have a call scheduled for this Wednesday night, and we had a call a month ago, and that I call that, you know, continues to put the wood on the fire. Of course, it's not emitting any CO2 emissions or anything, but it's just a metaphor for what she's doing. But it is work, and that's why I will hesitate to apply until I feel as though I can dedicate the time to it, because if you say yes, it's a big responsibility because of what we all said yes to. So to me, just major praise for them and their work. And she connected with all of us. And it was regional, which, you know, we were, connected with New Mexico. And it works out beautifully for me because I'm going to meet some of those climate reality people when I go to New Mexico for our, you know, to visit my family. They live in Taos. So it was really strategic and beneficial. We like hanging around each other because we want to talk about climate change all the time. They're the weirdos at that table. They're still talking about climate change. So let's talk about the responsibility that you expect of the attendees. A lot of information is provided and packed into the time spent there. What is your hope and that of your team about what people will actually do once they leave, which is when the action begins? What are your expectations?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have a lot of expectations, and we keep them quite high. But we do try to lay them all out up front so that we are completely transparent in what we think it means to attend a Climate Reality Leadership Core training. All of our trainees, yourself included, have signed a training agreement, and that training agreement states a few guidelines in terms of what it means to be a climate reality leader, but the crux of it, the heart of it, is that within that first year, we expect everyone to have attended a training, to have completed what we call acts of leadership. And acts of leadership are meant to be broad buckets of work in how to take climate action. So the heart of the program started, of course, with Mr. Gore's presentation, and that's a big ask. I myself give the presentation, and it takes preparation and time, and so that's really the main ask that we have of the program. But there are obviously so many other ways to take climate action, from news articles and op-eds to holding your leaders accountable and meeting with influencers and contacting them, to mentoring. Mentoring itself is a huge act of leadership because you're committing to follow up with all of these people. So many of our leaders are organizers, so they're on the ground doing grassroots work or participating in events and partnering with other groups. We try not to be too terribly prescriptive in our acts of leadership, but we want to ensure that people around the world are able to leverage their own assets, leverage their own kind of skill sets to take climate action in a way that feels relevant and important to them. Now, we're always happy to provide guidance and to make specific asks when relevant, when necessary, but we do try to keep those targeted so that people feel that they're being impactful, that their actions mean something in this wide world that can sometimes be a bit depressing. We try to provide a bit of a balance in terms of providing solutions to the climate crisis.
Well, it can be really depressing. We can say that on the air. It's like, yeah, it can be daunting, really depressing. And like I said to you, when I found out it was going to be 114 here next Tuesday, it's just so my plea to everyone, just pay attention because it's really, really getting hotter. That, when I moved here, was not normal. If it hit 110, we were all, fainting on the streets. When we come back, we're going to take another short break. I'd like to talk to you about what, if we could hone in on the term, you know, the kinds of support that the trained leaders ask of you, because there are many of us, and clearly not as many of you, to have to try and support. And I was curious as to what are some of the, if there are, you know, some overriding issues that those of us that attended turn to you and ask for support so that they continue on their work. And then I'd like to talk a little bit more. Of course, we have to talk about An Inconvenient Sequel, Truth to Power, the Reality Hub. So there's a lot more good things to cover. But let's talk about what people want from you after they leave. We'll be right back, everybody. Olena Alec from the Climate Reality Project. Stay here with us.
Mrs. Green's world's mission is to preserve the planet by creating a global community of people who care about the health of the Earth. We educate, inform, and inspire. Mrs. Green's World is an independent, non-political, agenda-free voice. Your generous gift enables all of us to explore the issues facing the health of the planet in a comprehensive way. As a Mrs. Green's World sustainer, you can assist us in offering trusted information, providing listeners with the tools to make their own conclusions and choose their own steps to create a healthier planet. Visit MrsGreensWorld.com and click on Become a Member today.
Welcome back, everybody. I am Gina Murphy-Darling, and this is Mrs. Green's World. Thanks for being a part of it. Please join me once again in welcoming Olena Alec. She is the Director for Climate Reality Leader Engagement for the Climate Reality Project, founded in 2006 by Nobel laureate and former Vice President Al Gore, who got the world talking about climate change with the Academy Award-winning film An Inconvenient Truth. The Climate Reality Project continues to move the conversation forward and to turn awareness into action, perhaps the most important component of that. And we can all look forward to An Inconvenient Sequel, Truth to Power, which will be in theaters starting July 28th. So please be sure to save the date, spread the word, invite friends and people that you love and care about and plan to be there. So back to you, Olena. What are some of the things that we ask of you?
It's a good question, and I would say it does change with the time of year, what's going on, especially here in the U.S., what actions may be most relevant in the current climate. But in general, they all sort of revolve around the same three areas. So one is simply technical questions.
Got it. I knew that had to be one. It's like, yes, that is, for me, one of the biggest challenges. So they are technical questions. I'm glad I am not alone.
Yeah, no, definitely not. It's the technical questions of, hey, can you explain XYZ slide, or can you tell me more about this source, or even simpler, I lost my password on Reality Hub. Can you reset it? Simple things.
I lost my PIN. Can I get another one?
Yeah.
Whining like that. Okay, so technical questions.
Yeah, those simple requests are great and easy to accomplish. Kind of the next bucket that I would say we get often is how to amplify their work, their initiatives, what's going on in their area that they would like us to know about. Those are always really exciting, and so we try to, you know, connect people with one another. Who else is in your neighborhood, your area, that can help you with your project, with your campaign or initiative? What can we do? How can we amplify out, for instance, this podcast? How can we get it out to a larger audience? So the amplification is always a really exciting opportunity, just because it gets us to know some of our leaders better and in a more one-on-one basis, which is always fun. And then the third question is generally around the presentation itself. So how can I find an audience to present? How do I, what are kind of best practices in that area? And we try to use all of these questions and build out toolkits and FAQs and resources to help people that maybe don't know the questions they want to have answered at the moment. But the presentation itself will certainly get us a bunch of questions. I want to add on a fourth bucket, simply because you mentioned it earlier. Right now, the question that is certainly flooding our inboxes is all around the upcoming movie and the premiere, and we're really excited to share information when we have it. Right now, at least here in the U.S., the premiere is July 28th, and then likely in two markets, likely in L.A. and New York, with a larger release the following weekend, August 4th. And some of those times are already available at local theaters, so we're just asking people to go look up or call your local theater and see if it's being played. It's certain to have an exciting reception in all of those cities.
And I doubt that it will beat the Wonder Woman numbers. I have to bring that up because I am a Wonder Woman fanatic. I'm thinking about getting my first tattoo, but there's a message of that happening too. But the movie did win an Academy Award. We got to see a trailer. It is going to be different and in good ways. It's not just a remake. And I'm very excited. So if it's okay, I would just like to just press pause here for a minute and talk about my experience, because there's a question at the end of it. I have been to many conferences, many workshops, gotten great takeaways, but this one really is different. And I wouldn't say that if I didn't mean it. People know I come from a very sacred heart space. So we have a group based in Tucson that I didn't know were at the Denver training, and some others who have actually been there three or four times, and it sticks. Like, it's made to stick, in the Seth Godin's words. We are meeting weekly, and all of us are busy. I mean, everybody's busy. And when I commit to a weekly meeting, it's like, this has to really be something for me to plan for the release of an Inconvenient sequel, Truth to Power. And we are finding people for a panel. We're honoring our commitments. What is the Kool-Aid that you're having us drink there that keeps us, and I'm not, that is not false praise on my part. There's something that I want to share with our audience and our amazing listeners about. You spark something in people that connect, make them want to commit, and continue to spread the word. And I don't know what the numbers are. They probably do. You know, it's not everybody that attends goes out and sets the world on fire. But this is a significant group of people in our city that are really committed to continuing the word and honoring the pledge we made. So what do you think are some of the magic components? Feel free to brag about you and your team.
You know, It is honestly an honor to get to work here. I've been here almost 4 years, and every day it is an honor and a pleasure to get to talk with fellow climate reality leaders. I myself am one, trained back in 2014, and while I can't pinpoint one thing, I think what does set our trainings apart, it's that mix. It's the mix of Mr. Gore, you know, who has dedicated his life to this movement and has been so passionate, and his passion just rings through in all of his sessions. It's the audience. Simply the network of people in that room are really incredible and inspiring people that are coming from such different areas, such different walks of life, and it's so exciting to get to meet people and be re-inspired. And then, you know, at the core of all of it, it's authenticity and transparency. We want to be, myself and my team and everyone here strives to be, you know, authentic in our work, to be transparent, to be reporting back on what has and has not worked. I think that's really important. We're not trying to be, you know, Debbie Downers every day. We're not trying to be Pollyanna-ish either. You know, we want to, we want, we're in this fight with you. You know, when times are bad, we all know that they're bad, but hey, let's find an opportunity to move forward. And when times are good, that's fantastic. Let's make sure we're celebrating our successes. There's a quote that I have pinned up at my desk, and I read it every morning because it's just so true, and it was sent to me by a fellow climate reality leader, and it says, there's too much bad news to justify complacency. There's too much good news to justify despair. And I think about that in this movement every single day, and that's how I start and end my day, and I think that's what we all try to do here.
Wow. I mean, that's powerful. It is. It's really powerful, and it's so important. And I usually start off my presentations with, we are facing the biggest threat to our planet in the history of our planet. And that kind of gets people's attention, because that's just the truth spoken into word. It's like, mm-hmm. there's a lot of things you're paying attention to, but none of that's going to matter if you don't have food to eat or water to drink or air to breathe. Which are three critical ingredients to life on this planet. I've noticed that. So I just want to, you know, I think it's important also that I don't remember, and I always exaggerate about how many slides we have access to, and that are very, you're prescriptive in the use. If you attended the leadership training, you can use them in an official presentation. And that's all done through the Reality Hub. And how many, doesn't Al Gore have something like, is it 30,000 slides? I was telling people it was 300,000, and they're like, Gina, stop it. I'm like, okay, take one zero off. But, and I mean amazing, powerful, impactful, pictures worth a thousand words kind of slides. So my question here is, whose responsibility is it to curate that? And the Reality Hub is where all of us go to see what other people are doing that were former attendees that are climate reality leaders. It is a hub of what's mm-hmm. going on. So how do you curate that? I wouldn't
that
want that job
question.
Either.
That's a good question, and it requires a few different teams here. So as you said, our Reality Hub is our kind of social platform only for exclusive to climate reality leaders, because it has resources on there that are only available if you've attended one of our trainings. The most obvious ones of those are obviously Mr. Gore's slides. And you're right, it's up in the... I would confidently say tens of thousands.
I swear I heard him say there's 30,000 slides.
I have not counted, but I could ask our science and solutions team. They have the database.
Yeah, I mean, it's a big number.
It is a big number, and you know, he's working on them constantly. For example, for the Denver training, we go to print. We have a booklet for our trainees that does include his slideshow in it, so that people can take notes and jot down thoughts and questions as he's going through it. And those generally have, you know, 400 to 500 slides in them. But by the time, even though we go to print just 2 weeks before the training, by the time the training has rolled around, 20% of that slideshow could have been updated, could have changed. It's incredible.
Yes.
It's absolutely incredible and inspiring how brand new that those news articles are, and those impacts and solutions. So it's really exciting. And so we do, you know, Mr. Gore and his team create all of his slides. And then our teams here, really our science and solutions teams and legal teams, are working to keep them updated and licensing agreements, and make sure we have all the sources linked appropriately. So they're always hard at work on keeping those up to date. But it is really our main resource, the heart of all of our resources that we can provide to climate reality leaders.
And it really, really matters, the whole issue of transparency. I mean, you have to do the deep dive to make sure that you're protecting yourselves and us who are accessing
exactly.
that information. So this is, you know, a question that you may or may not have an answer to. I never do the stump the guest question, but given the current administration's total about face on combating climate change, what, if anything, at the Climate Reality Project are you talking about differently or doing differently that might impact the training, and it might be different from what I attended in March? Because when in March, the message was don't despair, even though a lot of us came there very sad, very worried, but left empowered. So is it now that we're, you know, many more months in, is it impacting Are you doing things differently, or is it more of the same just because it's good to begin with?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Given the current administration and President Trump, taking action against climate change and wanting to pull us out of the Paris Agreement, it's incredibly discouraging. It's making it so much harder at a national level. But there is good news, and that good news, and there's a lot of good news. There are so many people working at a local and state and individual level to say, hey, we're still in. We're still in on the Paris Agreement. I'm still in on the Paris Agreement, and we're not giving up, and we're going to continue to push forward. And so much of that action was already taking place at a local and state level that we just have to keep up the pressure, and that is going to require potentially more work, but that's okay because we're all in it and we all know how critically important it is. And also there is some misinformation being spread about Paris, but we simply can't leave the Paris Agreement no matter what anyone says. It's built right in, and so this really can't happen until 2020 anyway. And so it's a reminder that we need to keep up the pressure at the local and state level, at the individual level, to make sure that we're pushing towards the renewable energy economy that is being proven by market forces anyway. Prices are dropping for the technology and the batteries, and everything is moving in the direction that is on the right side of history. And so whether or not any government is trying to stop this forward progression, that's on them, but we can only do our best to keep up the work and keep up the pressure.
And I think that is such a great answer, because I think it's really important for us, the people, mainstream America, living our lives, I live this 24/7 because of what I do, but there are lots of people who care deeply. And I think it's important that we do look at all of the amazingly good things that are happening. Businesses are saying, the green economy is here to stay, folks. That train has so far left the station that it's almost a joke to try and slow it down. And cities, mayors, states are signing, it is not just posturing. They're getting things passed in the city council and all that to say we support the Paris Agreement. So it's really unstoppable. And we have to remember that, because it can get really daunting. And you can choose to focus on the sad, which there are days when I think, pulling my head under the covers and just staying low would be a really good choice. So let's talk about, I think we are living, sadly, in a post-fact world. Science, research, evidence, they don't seem to matter to millions of people right now. How are you consciously combating that? Is it through making sure everything is vetted and what you put out is unquestionable science and research? Is that a tool that you're very conscious of, more so now than maybe 6 months ago?
I mean, absolutely. We need to ensure that we are always providing the most up-to-date and factual science that we have at our fingertips. But even more than that, we need to make sure that we're communicating that science in a real way, in a way that people will hear us. There are so many interesting studies coming out right now about how to communicate about climate change and why people who in all other respects may truly believe that science is real, believe that facts are real. Sometimes they're simply influenced by their friend groups, by their networks. So how do we get there? What values can we connect on? Can we connect in what faith we choose to practice? Can we connect on where we're from and that our local identities? Can we connect on the idea of stewardship of this planet? There are so many opportunities that we can make those connections in ways that people will hear us, that people will be willing to say, hey, I'm hearing you because I know we're connecting from the same value, from the same place. And so you're telling me that climate change is real and it's human caused and I can do something about it. Maybe now I'll listen. And so it takes a bit more work. It takes more work than than showing someone potentially a graph. And while some may read the graph and say, oh, I get it, others are going to have to be convinced, and they're going to have to be convinced on an individual level. And that's okay. We'll get there.
We have 1 minute left. I want to really say to people, the hashtag is ActOnClimate, if you're going to do social media about this. Please visit the website. It's climaterealityproject.org. We've got to see that. And Elena, thank you so much. We have John Schenck and Bonnie Cohen on for July 25th from An Inconvenient Sequel. Thank you so much for your contribution to my life and for the planet. Make it a great green day, everybody.
Thank you.